بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. اللهم كن لوليك حجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of God, the mercy giver, the very merciful. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I greet all of you with the greetings of peace, a peace that is impossible without justice. First, I'd like to comment on the very refreshing and uplifting presentation that we just heard from Pastor Dankoff. I sort of was living with his words. I was like a split personality sitting down, living with his words and the truth and validity therein. And on the other hand, living with some of the listeners, knowing the type of backgrounds and the type of, sometimes people call it conspiracy theory mentality that is out there. I want you to rest assured that none of that element existed in this podium from the previous speaker. And take my word for that. I think I have a title to my presentation, and I'll try to meet the contents of that title somewhat briefly, and then I'll try to pick up with some more relevant and contemporary issues. Prophets and justice. We have inherited a history of prophets. The prophets stood for justice. That was their mission. It may have been polluted in some history books, and it's definitely thrown out of the mainstream media. No one mentions any of that history, as if we have nothing in our human experience as far as these men of God when they existed on earth. Let me try to maybe dazzle some of you. Prophets were, to borrow some contemporary vocabulary, prophets were ideologues. And I don't mean that to demean prophets. I mean that to uplift the meaning of ideologue. And therefore, they came into conflict with their power structures. Every prophet in his time frame and in his social milieu came into conflict with the power structure that they were living in. This is applicable to all God's prophets. However way you read them, whoever names you may give them, that's a common feature that they all had. The same way that today we find ourselves facing this contemporary power structure, this is nothing new. If we were versed on the history of prophets and men of God in this world in the past, we would realize that what we are going through right now is very similar to the footsteps that were the new grounds that were broken by the prophets of quote-unquote ancient time. 1,000 years are like one day. So history is like the present. There's no disconnect. But obviously there are people there who are out to secure their own personal interests, their own class interests, their own peculiar interests, whatever they may be, national or racist or sectarian or whatever. So they want this disconnect between us and the rich experience that we should have inherited from this history. Prophets were, and when I use the word prophets, it's synonymous with some people's literature that says messengers, some religions may say emissaries, some others may say men of God, sages, etc. There's different, you know, terminologies for this. But these prophets who received scripture or revelation or communication from God, the same God that we affirm, these prophets actually bequeath to us a very precious experience to understand that if we proceed on the path to God, we are inevitably going to run into these power structures. Now, what do we do? When, first of all, you know, we use the word evildoers. Before there are evildoers, there are evil thinkers. And to overcome the challenges in this pursuit of God, this destiny towards God, these power structures present a very disturbing impediment, and very dangerous one too. This is real. This is the real world. And we're not speaking of something theoretically here. We're not speaking about something that something that has a distance of time between us and it. It is here. It is now. And so, what do we do? What did the prophets do when they were forced to face, look at these evil thinkers and then evil doers? What did they do? Did they cave in? Did they say, I'm going to outfox or outsmart or outmaneuver the power structure and play a game here with the power structure, get involved in some politics and all of this? Or did they stand on principle, having a commitment and a conviction and a faith in God that He is going to deliver me from this power challenge that I have? If we become a little more specific and take the lifetime of Moses, Moses definitely dealt with a power structure. The power structure in Egypt at that time was akin to a superpower in the language that we use today. And Moses was wanted by a superpower. What did he do? He say, you know, forget about, oh God, please relieve me of this responsibility. I can't take it. Does anyone read any verse anywhere in which Moses had this communication with God saying, you know, this is too much for me or something like that? No, it doesn't exist. He was under tremendous pressure. He was wanted dead or alive. The Egyptian authority was in hot pursuit of him because he had killed an enemy of one of his ethnic types. And so he was, quote unquote, a fugitive from the law. And he had to travel from Egypt to another land of safety, maybe along the lines of Mr. Giraldi's idea. We got to get out of this, here for the time being. But the issue is, none of them presented us with a type of escapist mentality. So we have to, first of all, acknowledge that there is this governmental power structure that simply doesn't want justice in life or in society or in existence or in its departments that are responsible for administering at different levels our lives. So what do we do? What do you do? The simplest answer to that is we stand on principle. God has given us insight, enlightenment, and foresight to speak, this is the least we can do, to speak truth to power. It's the least that we can do. No one can do anything less than that. If you want to maintain your relationship with God, if you want to break that relationship, that's another subject altogether. I have nothing to do with that at this moment. But if you want to maintain your relationship with God, the least that is expected of you, in the humble understanding of yours truly here, the least that you can do is speak truth to power. And it's not going to be easy. And here's where I want to make this transition from things historical to things contemporary. And I take this from my personal experiences. I don't usually talk like this or present such personal experiences, but I think you should know. I think this information should be made public. I think we should counterthink those right now in the CIA and the FBI, intelligence agencies. Right now we have Homeland Security with all the budget that they have and the gathering of information and all of this stuff. They tell us that they leak information. They say there's 26,000 individuals in the United States who are on a no-fly list. 26,000. I don't know if that's true, it could be more, but this is what they are telling us. Now, wouldn't it be something to think about to counter, you know, the evil that they have on their mind and its consequences? Wouldn't it be timely to try to mate with the computer systems that we have, to try to pool together these 26,000 people? I'm not on a no-fly list, at least yet. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But I get, every time I go to the airport, I get this, they call it S-Quad. On your boarding pass, they stamp it with four S's. That's after they make these telephone calls to home. The airline makes telephone calls to Homeland Security and the Transportation Security Administration, the TSA. And then after that, they stamp your boarding pass with four S's. So you have to go now through a screening process in which they pat you down, you have to take off your belt, you have to take off your shoes, you have to take off your jacket, whatever you have on. And then they get a little sometimes feely-touchy with you. They go through your belongings very, you know, thoroughly. Of course, there's nothing there. I just watch them. It's, for me, it's a scenery there, and I just, you know, pay attention to them, maybe speaking to them from time to time. Sometimes I take the opportunity to say, you know, if it wasn't for Zionism, you wouldn't be going through this, and I wouldn't be going through this. I throw in that word if I find someone who's amenable to understanding or has a little common sense in these things. So even these S-quads, individuals in this country, I haven't come across any number yet, but I'm wondering in my internal self, how many of us Americans or legal residents in this country, how many of us are S-quads who get these four S's on their boarding passes? And it would be nice to have them, because everyone's on the computer nowadays. There has to be a way to get, these are fine people. I guess 90%+ of them are just like me and you, average people. Yeah, we're giving our contrarians the benefit of the doubt. We're more than average, but we are average people, and we have no criminal records. We're morally committed, and we vote, we pay our taxes, we honor our neighbor, we go to our mosque or churches, we do everything that an average person does. So why are we, either some of us on a no-fly list and others with four S's on their boarding passes? Why is that? Can we not begin to think, this is where they've taken from us our ability to counterthink them? No, we want to counterthink them. If they have these lists and they're doing this, suspecting us of doing something wrong, which we haven't done, then we have to, by necessity, suspect them. Because if you've done nothing wrong, and they're trying to more or less have you feel that you are guilty, or you're a potential criminal, or an outlaw of some sorts, then we have to counterthink them. So, I don't know, I'm just throwing this idea out there. Is it possible to, through the, you know, computer system, get online and, you know, have some type of website and get the word out there that anyone who is being harassed by Homeland Security and TSA, etc., at these, and this is in the United States, if you happen to be overseas, you could be denied entry into the United States. The last time, a couple of months ago, I was coming back from the Islamic Republic of Iran. My flight was from Tehran to Amsterdam to Washington, D.C. This was KLM, the Dutch Airlines. And when I was in Amsterdam, I wanted to board my flight back. They have two security systems there at the gate. One of them is the airline security system, and the other one is the American Homeland Security personnel who have their officers stationed at different airports around the world. One of them is Amsterdam. It's not only the United States, other countries have it too. Britain has its representatives in there, and I'm sure other countries also have their representatives. But these are the two that I happen to have a encounter with on different occasions. So this person from American Homeland Security, Immigration, Customs, ICE, whatever, he comes up to me and he sits down. They sort of appear to be common sense and regular individuals. And they begin a little discussion with you. What do you do? Where have you been? Who invited you? What did you speak about? Where did you stay? These are common routine questions that they ask. And I give them the common factual, truthful, routine answers that I give them. And then after that, they begin to say, one of them at one occasion, not on this last encounter in Amsterdam, on an encounter before that, they say, do you have a criminal record? I said, no, I don't have a criminal record. And then he said, how about unlawful entry? Now, I knew exactly what he was talking about. back in 1983, some of you know this, some of you don't, but we were in our mosque in Washington, D.C. This is the Cathedral Mosque on Massachusetts Avenue, Embassy Row. And I was the elected imam, still consider myself to be the elected imam of that Islamic center, even though the Saudis, which is a another word for the American and Israeli government, they hired some vigilante force and forced us out of the mosque when we were on our, it's like you're in Christmas during your church service on Christmas Day. This was our Islamic Eid. It was Eid al-Fitr, the end of Ramadan. We were there in the middle of our services, and they came and they took us to jail on that day. And then they took us to court. It's a long, I know some of you are aware of this, but it's a long story. I don't have time for it right now. But one of the there were two charges against us, disturbing a religious service and unlawful entry into the mosque. And the jury, the judge, who was a Presbyterian judge in the District Court of Washington, D.C., he said, I've listened to, by the way, this is a, these are misdemeanors. These are not felons. These are misdemeanors. And he said he was supposed to rule on disturbing a religious church, religious service charge. And he ruled that we are innocent. And he told the Justice Department, the judge, he died last year. His name was Judge Sorrell. He told this, he requested the Justice Department to drop this whole case. As he's found out, it's a fabricated thing. But the jury, and by the way, the judge, you know who responded to the judge at that time? This was 1983, end of 1983, beginning of 1984. The third ranking official in the United States Justice Department at that time, I don't think anyone remembers who that was. Later on, he was to become the mayor of New York City. Later on, he was to run for president of the United States. Giuliani. That was a third ranking official at that time in the Reagan administration in the Justice Department. He told Judge Sorrell, we want to get these guys. So through the jury, there were 12 jurors, and they said, you know, we are guilty of unlawful entry into the mosque, that we were elected to be its administrators. There were 50 of us who were arrested on that day, on our high holy day, and taken to jail in Washington, D.C. We were released the following day, but that's what happened. This is what happens when, and this is just a scintilla of what was happening in the lives of God's prophets and God's men on earth. These things happen. Do we regret any of that? None of us regretted any moment of it up until this very day. Not one detail of that has been regretted. So this person, I go back to Amsterdam, and this person working for Homeland Security, he said, unlawful entry. Of course, he was reading probably my profile. And I said, look, everyone had boarded by this time, and you get a little tight on time here. I said, look, I was in the mosque that I was elected to be its imam. And a vigilante force, in addition to the Washington, D.C. police, they came into the mosque and they arrested us when we were in the middle of our service. You call that unlawful entry? If you were in your church on Christmas Day and the police came in and arrested you, is that unlawful entry? And let's say that somehow in your mind, this was against, what we were doing was against the law. It was a misdemeanor. It's just like having a traffic violation. What's that? You want to crucify me because of a traffic violation? He said, okay, but you know, the sermons that you give, they are, how would you characterize, I mean, this person has read very carefully whatever information was provided to him. He was asking me, how would you classify the sermons that you give? I said, I don't know. That's a very tough one. He said, would you think that you are somehow propelling people? I'm using borrowed words here, but this is the meaning. Would you think you were propelling people to action that would result in breaking the law? I said, no, I don't think it would result in... Yes, I would be propelling them to action, but I don't think it would be action to break the law, as you are saying. He said, but you speak about, you know, some of these issues that are maybe controversial or something like that. I say, I speak a lot about the Palestinian issue. And this guy happened to be an Irishman. He was honest enough to tell me he's an Irishman. I said, you know, maybe you can characterize a lot of my sermons as being with the oppressed peoples, Palestinians, the Irish. I'm sure if an Irishman was listening to my sermon, as well as a Palestinian, as well as... an Afghani, as well as others who are suffering from occupation and military schemes, they would love to listen to what I'm saying. But I think those who are leading the charge in the military and in the high offices of government, they'd probably hate what I'm saying. That's the best I can characterize this thing for you, sir. And they were telling me, you have to board right now, and they're pushing me. And I wanted to speak more to him to... But this thing, I told the latest one in Amsterdam, the one who stopped me a couple of months ago. I said, look, I would love to speak about this subject, but I can't do it in a couple of minutes. Go tell your superiors to set up a time frame that we can thrash this thing out in a few hours. Clear the air, in a couple of days if it's going to take that, clear the air on this subject. We are not, none of us here, you're suspect. We are here suspect because we are trying to speak to real issues from a scriptural point of view. They want scriptures to speak about history or to speak about something ethereal, something that has to do with the imagination, but nothing that has to do with real life, with caring for the poor, with coming to the aid of those who need help, with repelling aggression, with exposing lies, real lies that cost populations their existence. They don't want people speaking about that. So if you begin to speak about that, you become a subversive. Moses was a subversive. Jesus was a subversive. Muhammad was a subversive. Because they spoke scripture to issues of real life. They weren't there drawing a picture of heaven that had nothing to do with earth, or scaring people of a hell that had nothing to do with earth. Both heaven and earth, both heaven and hell are earth related. So you begin to put God's words in the context of these real life issues, they look at you as an insurrectionist. What? What are you trying to do? Well, I'm not trying to do anything. That's God's will. This is what God wants us to understand and what God wants us to do. Anyone have any problem with that? There's, I'm sure some of you are familiar with a site called the Investigative Project by this rabid Zionist called Stephen Emerson. One of the recent postings, it may have been last month, he has one in which MSAPSG is mentioned, Muslim Students Association, Persian Speaking Group. There's an FBI agent who appears on that. He said his first assignment was to follow MSAPSG. This was back, and I think it was in the late 70s, early 80s, way back then. Okay, here he comes. He's speaking to more or less, he's sponsored by a Zionist outfit, and he's speaking more or less to the crowd, the neoconservative type of Christians who are beholden to Zionism and who genuflect. You saw the way the Congress was yo-yoing itself up and down for Netanyahu. So we may not, do you think they gave up? The FBI is no longer around? Do you think they're no longer around? The guy right now, I think he's retired, if I can recall correctly. He's retired, but he began to speak. You can go to that website. I don't encourage anyone to obtain any information, any useful information from it. But it is a website that will give you an idea of how closely they are listening and they are watching. Okay, so what? Let them listen. I deliver my sermon every Friday on Embassy Row in Washington, D.C., in public, with a microphone for everyone to listen to. They can hear me. They can listen. And so what do? I get this imprimatur at the airport with four S's. That's what I get for that. I think it's like one of our speakers mentioned. It's a badge of honor. What are they going to do next? What are they going to? Okay, worst comes to worst, you know, they have this National Defense Authorization Act. They can pick up any American they want for no reason and have him disappear. Well, let's say this was going to happen to a prophet. What would the prophet do? What are you going to say? He's going to say, you know, this power structure is more powerful than God himself. If we are doing the will of God, then we say, no, this power structure or any other power structure in the world is not more powerful than God. And if God to do his will has me or another humble human being go through a course in life in which we're supposed to be patient and we're supposed to refer the consequences of this encounter to him, then that's what has to be done. It's not an easy thing. But if that's what has to be done, that's what has to be done. No one's going to welcome anything like this. I'm sure the prophets, they were very patient with God's will, but they worked God's will. And this is what is required of us. And if it's going to scare the daylights out of these people in high office, that the truth is beginning to come out, people are beginning to catch up on what is happening, then, you know, that's the consequence of what they are doing. If they were working their conscience, they would have nothing to fear. They would not need these intelligence services and all of these budgets to try to incriminate innocent human beings. What they're trying to do is to criminalize dissent. Okay? You want to criminalize dissent? You have the power to do that. You have the courts. You have the law enforcement. You have all of this thing. We have no one except our God-given conscience, our God-given heart, our God-given soul, our God-given mind. That's what we have. And if they're afraid of that, we don't have any machine guns. I don't have a BB gun at home. As much as a BB gun, I don't have. But I have the truth. Or at least I think I have the truth, or a good proportion of it. And if they're afraid of a person who has the truth, and they're there at the airport. Let me tell you something at the airport that many people don't know. When you if you're checking in like I do, when I came here to Houston, I checked into the airport in Baltimore. And I had a connecting flight in Atlanta. Now, when you check in Baltimore, you can understand, okay, you have to go through this security stuff. They take you aside and they do what, you know, the screening process that they go through. But then when you get to Atlanta, and I've done this many times in my connecting airports, I look at these gates and see if there's any of these TSA people at these other gates. I don't see any TSA people around. People are just boarding normally. But every time I get on a connecting flight, then the TSA is there at the gate. Well, so what happened? I mean, I just flew on a plane from Baltimore to Atlanta. And I didn't leave any airport. I'm still in the airport. What could I acquire? What could I obtain in that airport? A snack? Is a snack dangerous? A bottle of water that I want to drink, maybe, to rehydrate up in the air? Is that dangerous? So if they're becoming paranoid, which obviously they are, if they're becoming paranoid, I guess it's a time for them to look at themselves. What's wrong with us? What went wrong? What are we doing? We're picking on innocent individuals like this. One time I had a discussion at Dulles Airport, that's the international airport in the Washington, D.C. area. I was coming back from a trip from overseas. I had a discussion with a couple of these individuals. I said, now, and they know me and I know them because we've been through this routine many times. I'm a frequent flyer. And we're familiar with ourselves now. So I asked them, I said, now, I mean, why do you pick on an innocent person like me? I just happened to have come through customs with about almost 15 Saudi Arabians, as God would have calculated and assessed things. About 15 Saudi Arabians were right in front of me, handing in their customs card to the final customs employee there. And the speaking system was saying, "Welcome to the United States of America." This is all happening at the same time. And so this custom guy was taking the customs card from the Saudi Arabians, and they were going through very merrily to the arrival area. And here I am, an American citizen who served in the United States military, who has no criminal record. Here I am, motioned to go for secondary screening. So when I got there, I told these customs employees, I said to them, look, 9/11 was done by whom? I don't know your reading of it, and I don't want to go through the details of it right now. Obviously, this is a subject and exhaust a lot of time. But according to the official information out there, 15 out of 19 individuals were Saudis who committed 9/11. That's what all this information out there. And here I am coming to the United States, and I see 15 Saudis right in front of me, going right through as if they were Americans, and here I am subjected to secondary screening as if I'm a Saudi. Now, how does that square with you? How do you process this? One of them, she said to me, well, we had a colleague, he's a Pakistani actually, works with us. He went to Pakistan, and he's one of us. On his way back, he was subjected to the same thing you are subjected to. I said, well, doesn't that tell you something is wrong with the system? Come on. I mean, the signals are coming your way from every direction. Something is wrong. You suspect one of your own? He works with you. He's your colleague. You know him. He knows you. He went to visit his relatives in Pakistan. He's coming back and he's subjected to this? Doesn't that tell you something? Where are you? There's no longer the ability to think. But this is exactly the point. They have drained us of our ability to think what God and his emissaries wanted to teach us, and we have a rich history of it, extending for thousands of years. But due to the ungodly and the secular establishment that we are living in, we are disconnected from all of that. And as if right now, many of us are trying to recreate a needle. Thank you very much. I think I told here I've run out of time. Hopefully, if there's a question-answer session, or if there's not a question-answer session, we are brothers and we are beyond and above formalities. May the blessings and the grace and the peace, all of which come from justice on earth, may they be your share here. and in the hereafter. والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آل محمد.